Thank you. All right, my name is Maren Harwood, grateful recovered alcoholic. And unfortunately, maybe fortunate for you, I don't know, this is my last night of my 10-week stretch here. So I wanted to thank the group for allowing me and allowing me to stay the entire 10 weeks. It's very good. I'm grateful. I'm grateful that someone asked me. I'm grateful I was able to do it. And I thank God every single day that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I believe was divinely inspired, placed into the hands of a stockbroker during the time when alcohol was a serious epidemic. It changed the constitution of our country twice. It was a political, social, economic epidemic. And it was at that time God saw fit to drop the solution to alcoholism right in the laps of some of the worst suffering folks in the world. So it's incredible that up to this point, this book, over 80 years later, right, we can hang on every single word and it catches you right at the moment that you need it, right then and there, provided all we do is prop it open and do what it says, right? So I was mowing the lawn again today, which is my Sunday thing, it turns out. I guess I have a Sunday thing. And I was reminded of a story I heard. It's kind of like a little, I don't know if it's a limerick or not, from years ago when I first started coming around and getting serious about AA. This guy was telling the story about how back when they used to light the street lamps in the streets when they were made with like the like whale oil. And they would have someone who was designated would go around and light all the street lights in the street. So obviously before electricity. So what you would do is if you went up to the tallest point in the city, right, at that time probably was a church, right? You would go up to the top of it and you would look down, right? You couldn't always tell where the guy was going who was lighting the lamps, but you could tell where he's been. And that's the way God works in rooms like this, right? You could tell where God's been, right? And the fact that we walk into Alcoholics Anonymous, God is here with us right now, right? And whether we believe God is, whatever your conception is, that's okay. Whatever that, and that's all well and good, right? If it's the doorknob, okay, that's man-made, but well, let's just use that, fine. Whatever it is, that's great, right? Because the fact that we're breathing in and out, that we have an opportunity to be of use and of hope to other people who are some of the most suffering folks on planet Earth, and we get a chance to carry a message of hope to them. Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to even say thank God that alcohol was able to beat me into a state of reasonableness, as it says in our big book. So again, thank you to the group. So let's dive in. So let's do a little Cliff Notes version of what we've kind of gone over so far up to this point. If you don't know what Cliff Notes are, they were something that I tried to use to pass all my tests in school. Never really worked. There was never enough information. So, but we're just going to kind of skirt over a lot of this stuff, and then we'll finish up with step 12 and then get to you guys and your comments and questions. So in the beginning of the book, right, so when we're kind of walking someone through the idea of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the first 60 pages really give us an idea of what it is that we truly suffer from. Right? And if I don't know what it is that I suffer from, or if I can't convey that to the newcomer, we're going to have a difficult time carrying that message of depth and weight as the book describes. So, in the doctor's opinion, it discusses, Dr. Silkworth, the head physician at Towns Hospital, came up with something called the cure. If you want to dive into a little deep cut AA, or the Belladonna treatment, as Bill calls it, in his story. And so they were trying to help alcoholics. They were having a hard time, though. They weren't doing a great job. Unfortunately, they just didn't really know. But what Dr. Silkworth knew was a few things. He knew the alcoholic suffered bodily and mentally. This is the way he described it. He described it in layman's terms as a physical allergy, right? Every time I put alcohol in my system, I reacted differently than the general population. That's the definition of an allergy, an abnormal reaction. Every time I put it into my system, I would get energy, I would not feel tired, I'd be ready to go, and I could just get another job. Let's go to AC, right? That's kind of my, right? And for someone like my mother, for example, who does not have this illness, when she puts alcohol in her system, she feels tired, She feels lethargic. She even gets an upset stomach. And she doesn't like it. You couldn't find a drop of alcohol in my parents' house today if you tried, right? So it's just not part of... So they react differently. So my reaction is abnormal. Now, someone who's allergic to strawberries, for example, what's sound advice for someone who's allergic to strawberries? Don't eat strawberries. Yes, that's it. Just don't eat strawberries, right? The problem is the alcoholic suffers from something in the mind, right? Every time I relapse, my brain told me alcohol is a good idea, right? And then once I trigger the allergy, once I start, I can't stop, right? And then I try to stop on my own, and I try to sufficiently stop, and I can't do it without a change of mind. Right, that's where this whole thing kind of loops around. So as we, you know, we would go through the doctor's opinion, make sure the newcomer understands what it is we truly suffer from. Bill's story is excellent if we read it under the ideas of maybe you can't relate to being, you know, an old white stockbroker in the 1920s. That's okay. Here's what we're supposed to relate to in Bill's story. We're supposed to relate to the progression of alcoholism. We drink for fun, then we drink for necessity, then we drink for oblivion. Right, that's the progression of alcoholism. Bill's story is a masterful piece of literature to describe exactly that progression. So if we can read that with the newcomer and they can understand, that's great. Now, the newcomer is only going to be able to relate to the beginning of Bill's story. The point would be, if we can only relate to the beginning of Bill's story and not the end, we're probably going to drink again. So we've got to relate to the end of Bill's story, where he talks about this archway to freedom that he's gone through. Where he talks about a life beyond his wildest dreams, a purpose, a drive, something there. There's something of substance in his life at the end of his story. That's, as the kids call it, the bee's knees. Right? That's the important part. That's what we're after. We're after that spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. So then with the newcomer, we read there is a solution, which the title itself is a promise. Right, for someone who's hopeless, telling them there's a solution is a pretty good deal. Right, that's the hope we can carry to the alcoholic. Right, so there's a solution. Gives us a lot of great information. Page 24 masterfully describes that we literally can't play the tape all the way through. That is terrible advice for a real alcoholic. Hey, think about your last drunk, and you won't drink again. Unfortunately, I can't remember the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. I am without defense against the first drink, right? That means that as someone comes into AA that's new, you might want to, from the bottom of your heart, to not drink again. You could even pass a lie detector test that you'll never touch the stuff again. Unfortunately, we're trying to power a car with a AAA battery. We have a lack of power. That's our dilemma, right? So we need to tap into a power greater than ourselves to get us over that mental block, which tells me I can figure it out this time, and unfortunately unable to do so. The problem becomes, or the issue, or whatever you want to call it, is that unfortunately today, in today's world, a lot of times one relapse might mean a death, right? So sometimes to convey a message to the alcoholic of depth and weight, we've got to do it with a sense of urgency. We've got to let the alcoholic know that this thing is not hunky-dory and you could just make it back into AA. Unfortunately, and I guess fortunately, however you want to put it, I've had the pleasure of helping a lot of alcoholics who didn't make it. Right, or at least attempting to help them, they were unable to just keep coming back. Right, so again, if we're going to talk about sound advice to the alcoholic, keep coming back sounds good, and on the surface is all well and good, but that would imply they are not powerless over alcohol. That would imply that they have already had a solution to this thing. That would imply that they have the power of choice. And unfortunately, that's not the case for the newcomer. So telling them to keep coming back might just be terrible advice. In other words, hey, you might not be able to make it back. Why don't we perform triage today, solder off the wound, and see if we can maybe, just maybe, place your hand in the hand of God and see if we can get a solution to this thing, right? So after reading that with the newcomer and then more about alcoholism, it talks about the crux of the problem is the mind. Again, the brain The issue is of the mind. I wish I could tell you we had drinking problems. Turns out we got thinking problems, right? And so if my change of mind doesn't happen, more than likely the same mind that came into AA is going to be the same mind that comes back in over and over and over again. There needs to be a sufficient change in mindset. So then when we hit page 60, it starts discussing the third step, right? And that's the first time in the book where it tells you you're at a step, by the way. It doesn't. You're never really at step one or two. Those are merely conceptual steps, and we could take the newcomer through steps one and two in maybe 5 to 6 minute conversation, right? Provided that they're open and willing enough to answer a few questions and maybe say a couple things about themselves, and they might be able to realize that they're in the same predicament that we used to be in. Now, being convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success, right? That's the first convincing that needs to happen in the third step. So we read page 60 to 63, and it discusses the actor, right? Who's trying to run the show, who's trying to arrange the lights, the ballet. If only everyone would just listen to everything I say, the show is going to be great. Then what's it tell me? The show usually doesn't come off very well. Right, I'm a little bit angry at someone who didn't do something I wanted him to do. I step on the toes of my fellows, and they retaliate, seemingly, again, up of the mind, step on the toes of my fellows, and they retaliate, seemingly without provocation. Right, meaning they're doing it to me. I didn't do anything wrong, and it turns out I may have, as it tells me in the fourth step, set the ball rolling. Right. So if I'm convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success, right, and I understand that God can relieve me of the bondage of self, as it tells me in the third step prayer, right? The big book, when it was first written, used to tell us to do that prayer on our knees. It doesn't do that today, right? The idea that we're going to dive into why it probably plucked that out, we're going to read that a little bit later on. But then it tells us to write an inventory. Resentment, Latin word, sentar, which means to feel, right? Resentment means to refeel the same emotion over and over and over again, whether it's real or imagined. The big book makes it even easier than that. Write down a list of people you're angry at, people, institutions, and principles. Like, all right, no problem. That's how my sponsor got me. He's like, write down all the people you're angry at. Got you. You're first. Right? That's like, boom, like, that, no problem. Like, that was not difficult for me. Well, why are you angry at these people? Oh, that's even easier. Let me tell you why I am justifiably angry at these people. Oh, hey, what parts of self were affected by that relationship? That's where I got to dig a little deeper, right? Then it's like, okay, my self-esteem, my ambition, my personal relationships, right? My sex relations, whatever it might be, my pocketbook, or, you know, money situation, my ambition, pride, whatever gets kind of, you know, banged up along the way, personally. And then the hidden fourth column, page 67, right? Then I've got to find out the parts of self, right? What are my makeup? What's it I bring to that? Selfish, inconsiderate, dishonest, afraid, right? Those are the things I'm bringing to the party. So then I'm realizing, and if you're sitting down hearing somebody's inventory and they say two things, wow, this stuff, it's all the same stuff over and over again. Ding, ding, ding. Got it. Bingo. What is it that is going over and over again? Well, that I was never honest, considerate of anybody. I was always angry. I was always fearful. I was always this. So it was always you? Yeah. Bingo. That's it. Once the newcomer realizes that, we finish up our inventory. They chill for an hour. That's the only time stamp in the big book, by the way, is the 1 hour, right, after you share the inventory. And then they make sure they didn't miss anything on purpose. Right, that's the key. Unless, of course, they come up with something that maybe they thought of during that hour, then we write it down. We inventory it the same way. Steps 6 and 7 are encompassed in 2 paragraphs on page 76. Right, rather simple and straightforward. If we really think about it, it's like, hey, I've got these shortcomings. Turns out, I haven't been, the best person. and these are the things. And God, if you see fit, could you please remove these from me? Oh, by the way, not just the bad stuff. Might as well take the good stuff too, because I'm not very good at handling those either. Right? That's kind of the way. And then step 8 is 2 sentences, right? We already kind of made the list when we made inventory. Step 9, then we dive into going out to the people in our past, repairing the damage by letting them know that it's not their fault, right? That's kind of the big deal in the 9th step. I let my mother know it's not her fault that I'm alcoholic. I let my father know it's not his fault that I'm alcoholic. I let my sister know I was not a great brother. right? Now that's amends, right? I have to break the chain and free them from me, not the other way around. Like, I want to go make amends so I can feel free. It's like, whoa, little Timmy, slow down. Like, that's not what this is about. You get freedom on the back half of this whole thing, right? I love one of my mentors. He talks about AA. He's like the pay sucks, right? But the benefits are incredible, right? That's kind of the deal, right? We get the benefits on the back end of this whole thing, right? And that's the faith idea, right? I got to have faith that the person sitting down across the table from me, has actually felt those benefits as well after they do some things that are totally litter the alcoholic who's going through them with fear. And inventory is a fearful process. Making amends, sharing that inventory is a fearful process. How about making amends? It's a fearful process, right? They say freedom's right on the other side of fear. They say, what I mean to tell you is my experience is freedom is just on the other side of fear. So then we're starting to dive into steps 10 and 11, more of our maintenance steps, right? Step 10 is we continue to take this personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admit it. There's a timestamp right there too. Promptly admitting it, right? Don't just hang on to it and hope it like goes away. Admitting things right away is a powerful piece to this whole thing, because once we start hanging on to resentments, as they say, resentment corrodes the container that it's held in. Right, so if I'm holding on to resentment because so and so said something that I didn't like, but I'm hanging on to that resentment, are they thinking twice about it? No, they're not even considering it at all. I'm the one hanging on to it. It's only hurting me, really, at that point. Another one for resentment is drinking poison and expecting someone else to die. Like, that's kind of like the whole idea with resentments. They're only hurting the holder of them. And then we loop around the corner to step 11. 11 is a daily practice, a constant practice, as it says, right? When we retire at night, we look at what we did during the day. We ask ourselves a few pertinent questions, right? Page 86 to 88. 86 is where it talks about when we retire. And then at the bottom of 86 to 88, it tells us what we do when we wake up in the morning. We talk about meditation at that point, as if a general surveying the battlefield before battle. We're looking at step our day that way. Meditation, and then keeping quiet, pausing when agitated or doubtful, asking God for help when we may face indecision, right? Notice how it doesn't say asking our sponsors. We're going to God, right? That's the whole idea. No human power can relieve our alcoholism. We went over that and how it works. No human power could relieve our alcoholism, but God could and would if he were sought. The seeking part comes in step 11, when we're asking God to remove whatever barriers get between me and connecting with him, her, or it, whatever you want to call it. What is blocking me from the connection, full-blown connection, to be able to help other people? That's the whole purpose. We make the connection so I can beam it out to others. That's the whole purpose. And then, of course, that brings us into step 12. All right, step 12 followed right up into that. Now I understand what I suffer from. Now I understand what I brought to the party with all of my relationships and all of my my jobs and all that. I'm understanding those things. I'm really understanding the wreckage that I did because of the people that I made amends to. And now I'm understanding that my connection with God is the most important thing. And the only way to maintain something like that is to connect with somebody else who's hurting just as badly as we were. Right? So now, looping the corner to step 12, what we read last week is we make sure, if we can learn a little bit about the prospect, then great. What we're diving into today is going to give us exact, explicit, point-blank directions on how to help and access the newcomer. How to find the little God piece in them, right? Plant the seed in there, and see from there where that grows from. Not because I'm doing it, but because God is doing it. But we've got to run around and plant some seeds these days, right? And it's not going to be what you think it is. In fact, on page 94, when we get to that, it's going to be a lot different than the way we think it is. So, on the bottom of page 92, right, this is where we left off last week, the last paragraph, continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talking about, like, this is some straightforward, right down to the bone information we're giving the newcomer. Fatal malady. It will kill you. right? And that's that. And I know we don't want to scare the newcomer away, but I think they know this already. But having somebody else tell it to them might jar them a little bit enough to where they say, wow, this actually could be something. And it's going to be very rare for someone who comes into the rooms and hasn't had a friend of theirs, a family member, die from this illness. It's like 70,000 a year are dying just from opioid overdoses. We haven't even gotten into the alcohol and the car accidents and the stomach pumps and all that. Like, it's the numbers are staggering. It's like 7 or 8 an hour pass away from this illness in the U.S. I'm not even talking about worldwide, just in the U.S. Right? So if we can continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, right, a fatal malady, talk about the conditions of the body and the mind which accompany it. Again, you can use the doctor's opinion for this. Doctor's opinion does talk about the allergy, right? Physical allergy and mental obsession. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. There it is. There's the caveat to talking about it being a deadly illness. Maybe even scaring them a little bit. Is that going to scare them straight? No. Right? Hey, you couldn't scare me straight. Right? You're going to die from this thing. Okay, great, thanks. Right? No, I'll be all right. I'll figure this out. Right? That's the way I would think. But what do they offer? What do we offer here? What did it tell me that I offer in Alcoholics Anonymous is a solution? That's what we're supposed to offer. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of an alcoholic. If his doctor is willing to tell him he is alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious about how you got well. Let him ask you that question. That's very specific. Let him ask you. Keep saying, I'm not live that way anymore. I don't feel that way anymore. And then they might say, well, how did you do it? Boom. I don't know if there's any fishermen or fisher ladies out there, but that's when you're getting the nudge on the hook, and then you set the hook. We're setting the hook breakers. We're getting them to ask us. If they weren't curious about it, they wouldn't even ask us. Right? But they're asking us. Right? How did you do it? What do you mean you don't feel that way anymore? Right? There's going to be millions of variations of that question, but it's going to sound exactly the same. Help me, is what it sounds like. They might be direct like that. Like, I'll do anything to feel that way. I'll do anything to get where you're at. Anything. If you got somebody like that, basically the fish is jumping in the boat. You don't even have to hook them, right? You're just like, they're already jumping in. Like, let's help them. Right? Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. Now that is exactly right. Whether it doesn't matter what you drank, what substance, none of it matters. The thought that it's a good idea this time is what links everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous together. Anyone that's ever, quote-unquote, relapsed or tried to stop on their own and drank again. Because the mind, the mental twist in every alcoholic said it was a good idea. That's the proper enemy. We're not fighting alcohol. We are fighting our thinking. And I lose 9 out of 9 times when I fight my own thinking without the proper, right, without the proper power. I'm without defense against the first drink. So I need to bring in a defense stat right away. The sooner the better, right? That's literally what it's telling me. Show them the mental twist, right? We could tell that by stories. We could say, when I looked at my, sobbing wife in the eyes and told her I was done forever, and then 2 hours later, I was able to get access to the keys and $20, and I was gone, right? Like that's the mental twist. I was done 20 minutes ago, forever, and then boom, right back out, right? With the tears of remorse still wet on my shirt, I was going down to get what I needed to get. Right, that's the mental twist that it's talking about here. We suggest you do this as we have done in the chapter on alcoholism. There you go. We can refer back to that chapter, more about alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, you will understand at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him from your experience how the queer mental condition surrounding the first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't, at this stage, refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. Where am I? Am I in the wrong spot? Yeah, I am. We already read this point. So, essentially, maybe folks in your personal experience, explain how many are doomed if they never realize the predicament. And I'm down at the bottom. Doctor, I'm on top of the other page. Admitted his condition, becomes very curious about how he got well. Let him ask you that question, if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. That's an important squiggly letters. Smart people call it italics. Bill didn't use bold print because it was more expensive to do when they did it. It was a bit too pricey to do bold. So they used italics, which is just a little bit more than the regular print. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He's telling you how to tell him. Emphatic. Well, you don't have to agree with my conception of God. That's not emphatic. That's not. Like, literally, without God, I'm not here. Well, I don't believe in God. That's cool, man. Like, rock on. Neither did I. Right? And here we are. I mean, if you think about it, we were spiritual before we got to AA. And you're going to be like, well, what do you mean? Well, alcohol is a spirit. It's called wine and spirits for a reason. It's the same thing. It does the exact same thing that we're looking for. Freedom. Right? It did something for me. Right? And that's what spirituality for us in the AA, in the 12-step program, in the God sense, is doing for us. Doing something for us that we couldn't do for ourselves. Right? It's technically, and as Carl Jung wrote a letter to Bill Wilson in 1961, he talked about it. Spiritus contra spiritum, right? Spirit versus spirit, right? The same poison that alcoholics drink is basically the same solution that they're seeking. So if alcohol is not the problem, it's the solution, right? So if it's a solution to my thinking, and if my thinking is the problem, another spirit's going to get me out of it, right? So it's spirit versus spirit. Which way are we going? Right? Unfortunately, and as Emmett Fox puts it, creatures grow in stagnant water. We're not going to be able to just chill out for a long time. Right? We're either growing towards one spirit or growing towards another. Right? That's the case. I wish we could just... I've never been able, or I'm not very good at science or know a lot about it, but I know if you're coasting on a bike, you're not coasting uphill for very long. You coast downhill rapidly. Right? You'll fire backwards. Right? So if we're climbing towards a higher power, I'm not going to be able to coast uphill for very long, right? We'll get drawn back. And what that looks like for somebody like me is it looks like sports betting on my app. It looks like scratch-off tickets. It looks like gambling of any sort. It looks like risky sexual behavior. It looks like lustful thoughts. It looks like gluttonous eating. It looks like 20 damn cups of coffee a day. It looks like 10 monsters. It looks like gluttonous over money and power and prestige and more. But I'm not drinking. Right? Like, I could justify it in my head. I'm not drinking or using drugs, but, right, how are we living? Right? That's why in the word sober, I don't know if you ever look it up in the dictionary, it's pretty neat. Only one definition has to deal with it, lack of intoxicants. The rest of it, like that, the definition of sober is really, really cool. Because it talks about being calm, even, collected, right? Not too bright, not too flashy, not too, it's just kind of very even keel, right? That's kind of the way it describes in the dictionary, sober, right? So the idea is, I'm not learning to get sober, I'm learning to live. And if I can learn how to live on a proper basis. So if we're conveying the message to the alcoholic that they don't have to agree with our conception, it tells me to emphatically do that. He could choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. More important squiggly letters. The main thing is that he'd be willing to believe in a power, capitalized P implies God, greater than himself, that he lives by spiritual principles. How do we know if someone is willing? Ask him. Okay, so you're in agreement. You're showing some of the same isms that I used to. This is what I did to roll out of that. There's a spiritual component to this whole thing. Are you willing to believe there's a power greater than you? Yes, I am. Rock on. Let's move forward, right? That's the case. That's it. Ask them. We have a very hard time asking the newcomer direct questions, and it's only because we don't want to hurt them or scare them or whatever. Like we're trying to you know use kid gloves here, and I get it. And we don't want them to run away. And okay, if they run out of here, they were going to run out of here anyway. They already had it in their mind. If they still have an alcoholic mind, they're going to drink again. Like there's no like let's try at our best to remember that I'd rather someone be mad at me and eventually get well, then someone be happy with me and me be a pallbearer at their funeral. That's you know, again, that's an opinion of mine, but it also the way the book talks about it as well, right? If they're not ready for our solution, that's okay. He's going to tell us in a little bit. If they're not ready for it, that's all right. What does it say? Move on to somebody else. Find somebody who is, right? By going out and seeking the alcoholic. It tells us in the book, when approached by someone with whom the problem had been solved, that teaches me how to sponsor. Don't sit in a room and hopefully your share is good enough for some newcomer to come up to you and ask you to sponsor them. That's not what the book says. It says the exact opposite. We're supposed to go out and find them. When approached by someone with whom the problem had been solved. If you identify as someone who the problem has been solved and you're not approaching other alcoholics, you're either selfish or afraid. That's it. I wish I could paint it a little sweeter picture for you, but it's not the case. Oh, I don't know how to help others. What do I do? Oh, there's a chapter about it, and we're going over it right now. It's telling me exactly what it is to do. Remember, the main thing is that be willing to believe. Are you willing to believe? Yes or no? If the answer is yes, let's move forward. Right? When dealing with such a person, we better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. Here, right, we're not trying to prejudice anybody with more than likely what he's going to describe as religious higher power concepts, right? So that's the idea. The idea here, we are curbing our language slightly, right? And who knows what kind of experience they might have with religion or whatever. Like, that's not the point. Using everyday language to describe spiritual principles. You can pull out any Beatles lyrics, right? Love is all you need. There you go. Everyday language. Got it, right? Let's start there, right? Care in the third step. There you go. That's everyday language to talk about God, right? Grace, mercy, those are a little religious leanings, but let's find other words like that, right? Leeway, forgiveness, right? Whatever you want to call it. Like using everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and concepts about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues no matter what your own convictions are. Right, there you go. Right, don't play God by describing your God to somebody else. Right, that's not the point. The point is that they be willing to believe in a power greater than themselves. And if they want to discuss that further, then great. I'm not going to like tattoo my conception on them. It's not fair, right? Because any little bit of anything, any little bit of an inkling, right, they're out of there. It's kind of like my kids and I. We watch these nature shows. And these poor like antelope, right? They're just out there like grazing, right? Right? And they're just hanging out. And then this giant cat is like prowling up on them, right? And then at the first sign that there's something creeping up on them, their little ear goes up, right? They're and then all of a sudden they hear something. And then once they get a little bit of fear, they're gone. Roll out. Once they hear something, they can put them in danger. That's why their ears move like 360. So they could catch things all around them, right? Nature gave them a little bit of a, for lack of a better term, a heads up, right? It gave them that, right? So that's the same thing with certain theological terms and concepts, right? The ear might go up for the newcomer. Oh, hold on. They might be talking about what grandma talked about back when I was, you know, or at that Catholic school that they would slap my wrist with rulers, like, whoop, there goes the satellite, right? And they might shut them off. It's not saying don't talk to them about how deadly the illness is. It's saying don't talk about specific and exact godly terms. Let's keep it open. That's why he calls it the broad highway. He capitalizes that too in the book, right? We got this whole broad highway idea. So it's open. It's roomy. All right, cool. Like, you're willing to believe there's a power greater than you. You're invited. Come on in. Right? You already kind of wandered in here anyway. Turns out you might have an issue. Let's talk about that. Okay, great. Come on with us. Your prospect may belong to a religious denomination. So we're going now the other side. From your atheist, agnostic, right? And the word agnostic is, again, a Latin term. And Gnostic means without. Like, ag means without. Gnostic means knowledge, right? So technically, if we're going to get technical, I know you love when I get technical. Whether you believe there is a God or believe, bless you, or believe there is no God, you still believe something for which you have no proof. Therefore, everybody is agnostic. There you go. How about that for leveling the playing field? Anyway, enough of that. Your prospect may belong to a religious denomination. His religious education and training may be far superior to yours. In that case, he is going to wonder how you can add anything to what he already knows. But remember, you've got a solution. Right, they've got theological terms and maybe whatever their text is, biblical, Quran, whatever, they've got knowledge there. Okay, that's good, but it wasn't sufficient to overcome alcoholism, or they wouldn't be in front of you. Right? That's the idea, right? No better than, less than, shoulder to shoulder, right? That's what it discusses. But he will be curious to learn why his own convictions have not worked, why yours seem to work so well. He may be an example of the truth that faith alone is insufficient. To be vital, vital means life-giving. Faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. Boom. How about a heavy hitter sentence tucked in towards the bottom of 93, right? Faith is good, by itself insufficient. To be vital, to be life-giving, it's got to be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. Bring that up at your next open discussion. Any topics? Yeah, I read in the big book that for faith to be vital, it needs to be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. Anyone got anything on that? Right? You can watch the tumbleweed roll through the meeting, right? Because that's not what they're telling people. What they're telling people is, oh, no, no, it's a selfish program. No, no, you got to think about you. You got to get you right. Whoa, let's get you right first. It's like, no, like, not correct. That's not what the book says, at least when this was effective. Right, when the success rates were really high, when low bottom, you know, alcoholics were not drinking ever again, right? That's not the way the program works. In order for faith to be vital, it's got to be accompanied by these things. Let him see that you are not there to instruct him in religion. Admit that he probably knows more about it than you do, but call to his attention the fact that however deep his faith and knowledge, he could not have applied it, or he would not drink. Let's also consider the context of this. Bill, a more progressive from New York, talking with Dr. Bob, a Bible Belt, very religious-leaning man, right? How were they able to connect across the table on that fateful day when they first met? This is how. One had one piece, one had the other piece. Right, one a sales guy, no problem, being able to convey a message, a great orator, right, able to discuss something. Bob, the religious side, all well and good. Neither by themselves were functioning, were able to do anything about their drinking until all of a sudden, like 6 months sober, Bill's sitting in front of Bob saying, "We should probably marry these two things." Right, let's marry this whole God idea and the helping others part. That's the key to this whole thing. Finding God is great. Showing others how you found God is even better. Showing others how they can possibly, let's create a roadmap for them, right? Or a blueprint, a blue book with print in it, with directions on how to do it. It's not me telling you, it's just, this is what I did. It's not, I'm not going to give you my roadmap. This is the roadmap. There are many ways to recovery. Great, go for it. I know in AA there's one, and it's right here, right? well, but you can have many different, whatever your own conception is, that's great. Your own conception is fine. It just told me that, right? But the path is the 12 steps. That's the path. That's what this book is guiding us towards, this whole thing. It's going to give us little itty-bitty outs and little itty-bitty gray areas, but what does it do? It pulls us right back in every time and says, oh, by the way, remember, faith, right, to be vital, you got to think less of you and think more of them in order for that to work. You can have faith all day long. That's great, right? I can lay in bed and have faith that God's going to fill my belly and my bank account. And at the end of the day, I'm going to be hungry with less money. Right? That's just the way it's going to be. Faith is good, not sufficient by itself. And one thing that gets left out, of course, is that the action that it's asking us, right? It's telling us constructive action. That's important. Let him see that you are not there to instruct him, right? We've read that already. Admit that he probably knows more than you do. Perhaps your story will help him see where he has failed to practice the very precepts he knows so well. We represent no particular faith or denomination. We are dealing only in general principles common to most denominations. Done. Right? Again, the idea here is, it's not that we're going to scare them away. It's that they might just be looking for an excuse to run away. And that might do it. Right? It's talking about spirituality. And every day, what does it tell me here? General principles. Right? That's the idea. Here is exact directions. Outline the program of action. Explaining how you made self-appraisal. 4. How you straightened out your past, 9, and why you're endeavoring to help, endeavoring to be helpful to him, right? That's what the program's about, right? It just gave us, look at this, 4, 9, and 12. The scary steps, that's the program of action. That's what we're supposed to outline to the newcomer. I made self-appraisal, it wasn't pretty. I shared it with somebody else, all right? That's great. And then what did I do? I straightened up the past. And why I'm endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. That's the piece. I made self-appraisal. It wasn't pretty. I straightened out things from my past. Some of it wasn't pretty. Others were amazing. Now I'm only helping you because it's the only way this thing works. Turns out. Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain, he is under no obligation to you that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. That's a promise. Not if he escapes, when. That's literally a promise. And if we're telling that to newcomers, well, if you get this thing, like that's not the language it's asking me to use. When you get this, the only thing that makes this whole thing worthwhile is you carry it to somebody else. It's the only thing. Suggests how important it is that he places the welfare of other people ahead of his own. That brings back page 20 in There Is a Solution, right? Where he talks about our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we can meet their needs. Page 20 to 94, what does that do? It's planting the seed on page 20 and telling me exactly what I've got to do to get to 94. Both concepts are exactly the same. There's just some action in between. A little chapter called Into Action, right? So it's like, that's what we've got to do to get to here. Now it's all circled. It's all back to the same thing. Suggests how important it is that he placed, there it is, make it clear that he's under no pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he calls it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. That is not sugarcoating anything. Right? It's like, and we talk about planting seeds, right? The best way for a seed to take root is to till the soil. or disturb the soil. Right? So the roots will have a little more space to take root. That's the point. We might disturb them of the question of alcoholism. That's to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. Right? I mean, that's so different from the way things are getting painted today. Well, let's get them comfortable. Let's make sure they're okay. Get the job back. Get the place to live. And then we'll go with this whole step thing. It's like, that's not what the book says. I wish it did. Can I be honest with you guys for a second? Here's what I wish it said. Go get a high-paying job. Right? Get a spouse, significant other of any kind that will co-sign all your BS. Right? And do whatever you say. Go find that. And make sure you eat high fat foods, right? And just chill out. God, I wish it said that. Please, if it says it in here and I missed it somehow, studying this damn book for almost 9 years, just let me know, right? Unfortunately, from what I've seen and from what I've studied, it is none of those things. In fact, it tells me the opposite. It tells me I could get well in spite of anybody else. In spite of who's in my life, who's around, all that. Take the human element out, including you, and you've got a good shot. That's literally what the book is telling me, right? If your candidate may give reasons why he need not follow all of the program, right? Notice how it says all the program, right? I call it buffet style AA. In a lot of meetings, they have the 12 steps on the wall, right? And if you sit with the newcomer, and I did this, that's why I can admit this. You look at all the steps, you'd be like, all right, that one's cool, like that's good. No, no, not that. Yep, this. I'll make amends to like my mom and my ex-girlfriend. I want to see her again, right? And then it'd be like the other stuff, okay, well, I can take and leave that. No. All right. Buffet style AA. He might give you reasons to not follow all of the program. He may rebel at the thought of a drastic house cleaning which requires discussion with other people. Do not contradict such views. Tell him you once felt as he does, but you doubt whether you would have made much progress if you had not taken action. On your first visit, tell him about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. If he shows interest, lend him your copy of the book. Of this book. Right? So, it's again, they might say, I'm not interested in this. Don't say, well, you have to be. Say, okay, I get it. I get it. I was 13 years in and out of AA because I wasn't interested in doing certain things. Right? X, Y, Z, name it, whatever it might be. I get it. I understand. All I can tell you from my experience, if I didn't do those things this time, I wouldn't be able to sit here and help you right now. Let's get started, right? And it's at that point, maybe they need a little more convincing. Maybe there's a little bit more discussion that needs to be had. Hell, maybe they just need a pack of smokes. Let's find out what that is, right? Good old, it's like sales, right? Objection handling. Like, let's figure this out. In fact, we could even close that door before it gets there. Before we even get them to that point, be like, when I came into AA, I wasn't going to do any of this stuff. But it turns out I had to in order to get better. Does that make sense? And be like, yeah, there you go. Close that door right on up. Maybe before I'd even get a chance to throw it at you. Yeah, when I saw the word God, I hated that. I didn't know what that meant. I knew nothing about that. You probably feel the same way, right? Yeah. Well, it's good news. You don't have to feel any particular way about anything. You just have to be willing. Willingness. That's the key. That is the key that opens all spiritual doors. Emmett Fox, right? Just got to be willing. And in this case, willing to believe there's a power greater than you. All right, a couple more minutes. Let's see. If he wants to quit a job. Oh, there's so much good stuff in here. Okay, we're going to go to the bottom of 96. All right? Bottom of 96. This is just good sound advice. Right? He may be broken homeless. If he is, you might try to help him by getting a job or a little financial assistance. Be careful there, right? But you should not deprive your family or creditors of the money they should have. Why is that? Because it tells us in the ninth step, after it tells us the ninth step, in the tenth step, we start the tenth step while we clean up the past. Right, so I'm not supposed to lend money to the newcomer if I still owe Verizon $300. Or if I still owe previous employers money, whatever it might be, or I still whatever creditors he's talking about, or I'm pulling from my family to give them that $20 or whatever it might be. It's literally telling me I'm not supposed to do that. And it's when we see newcomers, right, that have on the benefit of step zero, or they're in the middle of maybe their inventory, be like, oh, I just got this awesome tattoo. Like, oh man, that's pretty rough. Like that money was somebody else's. Right? You probably owe money to somebody, don't you? Right? That's pretty... They go out and buy a new car or something that's not necessarily a necessity just because they want to, because they got a couple bucks in the bank account. Now it's like, oh, wow, I didn't know you made all your financial amends. Oh, well I didn't. Well, what are you spending money for then? Right? I mean, again, we're not leading or directing their lives, but at the same time, like they need to be brought into an awareness. You're not going to get better unless you do this stuff. This could kill you without doing this stuff, right? Dr. Bob was against making his amends. That's why he drank again in the fine town of Atlantic City, right? That's what happened. He was not willing. And then when he came back, he made them all in one day because then he saw, right, the futility of not doing those things. Be certain you will be welcome to your family. Again, we might try to pull him into the house, not necessarily, but never avoid these responsibilities, doing the right thing for him. Helping others, this is the top of 97. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the good Samaritan, capitalized, implies being one of God's soldiers, right? Every day, if need be. It may mean the loss of many nights' sleep, great interference with your pleasures, interruptions to your business. It may mean sharing your money, your home, counseling frantic wives, relatives, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at many times a day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. A drunk may smash your furniture at his home or burn a mattress. You may have a fight with him or be violent. Sometimes you have to call a doctor, administrate sedatives under his direction. Another time you may have to send for the police and ambulance. Occasionally you have to meet these conditions. In other words, it's not always pretty what we do. But it's telling me, right, that a kindly act once in a while isn't enough. Driving him to a meeting isn't enough. The Good Samaritan, right, capitalized, right, we've got to do God's work down here. And how we do that is we plant seeds. We share as much hope as we can so that the hopeless can raise their head and say, I'm interested in this. I need help. They walk in here, they're already admitting it, and they don't even know it. Right? Maybe they're just trying to get their sheet signed for court. Maybe they're just trying to get it signed for their recovery house. Who knows? God put them in front of us. And for me to not carry this message, for me to not extend my hand, for me to not at least offer any sort of help in any way whatsoever in a solution to alcoholism, I am selfish. I'm afraid or selfish. And if that's you, that's okay. Coming into awareness is the only thing that's going to get us to a point of action to do it next time. If we're not aware of what we're doing, right, we're not going to be able to fix it. Right, I only have X amount of sobriety time. I can't help him. Good thing no one told Ebby Thatcher that. Ebby Thatcher had 2 months sober when he approached Bill Wilson while he was drinking in his kitchen. They didn't tell Ebby Thatcher to wait a year to help people, and they didn't tell Ebby Thatcher to stay away from people, places, and things. Ebby's had a spiritual awakening as a result of the 6 tenets of the Oxford Group. That's great. Ebby's locked in with God. Go find the worst drunk you know and help him. That was the advice they gave him. And without that happening, I don't believe that I'm here today, hanging on every word of this book and carrying this message to other alcoholics. So let's remember, let's get back to the blocking and tackling of this whole thing. I'm the problem, I'm not the solution. You're not the solution for me. Turns out there's a higher power, and if you're willing to believe, that's all you need. End of story. If we're sitting here trying to convince someone they need to get better for 2 hours, we're taking 2 hours away from either our family or someone that might actually need this thing. Let's not waste our time. Let's carry this message as best we can. There's newcomers everywhere. You can accidentally walk into an AA meeting these days, and let's carry this message. It's clear. It's concise. I just couldn't put it any better than the way it is in here. Let's tell the truth. Let's make sure they know what they suffer from. Let's make sure we know what we suffer from. Let's not get too big for our britches. And remember, when we go to AA and we're going to AA to keep it green, that means we're benefiting off the pain of the newcomer. I'm not going to AA to keep it green. If I see someone who's suffering, I'm not thankful that I'm not suffering as bad as them. I'm walking up to them, I'm shaking their hand, and I'm telling them, I can help you. There's help here. There's a solution here. I'm not here to keep it green and I'm going to feel better about my life. It's like, you ever hear that? Let's throw all of our problems in the middle. You're clamoring for your own. Like, how selfish is this? It's ridiculous. There are people throwing their problems in the middle. Okay, let's look for the worst one and go help them. That's what this whole thing was built upon. The whole program of AA. How can we be helpful to other people? And I'll end with this. C.S. Lewis, when he wrote in that book, Mere Christianity, that I talked about, that I vowed I would never read anything like this book my whole life, and then wound up changing my life. He says, humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. Right? And if we can aim humility at the world and think about others a little bit more than we think about ourselves each day, we've got a really good shot at carrying this message and acting the Good Samaritan every day. Guys, I really appreciate this group so much. Thank you for allowing me to share and be in here these 10 weeks. Thank you so much.